No hype, no fear. We are TFR Frequency Radio.
Hello, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the radio show one more time. My name's JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. We are coming to you on your very favorite network for truth and alternative information, Truth Frequency Radio. You can find us at truthfrequencyradio.com. You can find us at redpillreports.com. And you can find us on the dial at 90.7 in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Today is the 27th day, that's 27th day of May. That makes it officially a Wednesday. I can't believe how close we are to June, ladies and gentlemen. You realize, seriously, just think about this for just a second. What are we, 20 weeks away from Christmas music right now? I mean, seriously, 20 weeks maybe at that. Yeah, I hope you guys are getting your Christmas shopping ready to go. Oh, good. My mouse just died. Good times. Come on back, buddy. Come on back. All right. Anyway, really appreciate you guys tuning in this morning. It is Wednesday. We're going to get through it all together. It is the crux of the week, but all we have to do is get through today. I want to give a quick shout out to my good friends, Diane and Mark. Both of them came through yesterday with some very generous contributions to our GoFundMe. And without listeners like that, it would be difficult for us to say that we are, in fact, listener-powered. So I really, really just want to say thank you to Diane and Mark for stepping up, making a donation, helping us keep all these balls in the air as we're trying to juggle this radio show every day. And a lot of people out there thinking this can't be done, and I really want to prove them wrong. I've heard so many times that you can't do 10 hours a day working on a radio show without another job and make it fly. Can't be done. Well, I'll tell you what, we are past the 6-month mark making that happen. So, and it's because of people like Mark and Diane stepping up and proving all those other people wrong. So, if you're one of these people out there saying what we're trying to do here to be completely listener powered is impossible, that's fine. But please step out of the way while we do it anyway. So, just again, real quick shout out to those two kids making some contributions yesterday. If you guys can see it in your heart to make some as well, we do have the GoFundMe going on at the Red Pill Reports website right now. And, really, really do appreciate it. It makes a lot of difference in our lives, and it makes a lot of difference in other listeners' lives, people that can't actually help right now, but would like to. So when these people like Diane and Mark step up, it actually affects a whole lot of people's lives, not just mine and not just the two guys behind the scenes here at Red Pill, Robert and Fletch. Of course, they do appreciate it as much as I do. So again, appreciate that. Yeah, I have some bad news today, and I have some good news today as well. The bad news is we did have a guest cancellation this morning. We were going to speak with a gentleman that I think is going to be pretty interesting, and I would like to get him back on the program, but we just could not kind of get our wires connected today. So we're going to do that on a different day, but we did call an audible this morning. Called an audible, and the audible's name is Kenneth Shorchin Jr. He writes for the Daily Economist. He also writes for Rogue Money. Very, very intelligent guy. And last time he was on the program was about 20 days ago. We were talking quite a bit about whether or not Greece was going to be able to make this payment to the IMF. Ooh, surprised they barely did. And we also talked quite a bit about the war on cash. I do want to dig in a little bit more today with him about the TPP and try and figure out what we can actually ascertain about this huge trans-Pacific partnership thing that's going on, you know, the big secret trade bill before we all get Nancy Pelosi'd into accepting another draconian what have you, which is kind of par for the course. Also, the IRS was hacked. Yeah, I'll say that again. The IRS itself hacked over this last couple of days. And so we'll have to talk about that, because really, fundamentally, if the IRS is getting hacked, how safe are your bank accounts, guys? Seriously. I mean, let's talk about that. And then also, every time I turn around, BRICS seems to have some kind of new component. Have you guys noticed this? It's either BRICS is coming up with something new or China's coming up with something new. There has been this Chinese, what is it, the Shanghai Gold physical gold changing, you know, this, this gold exchange that is basically taking the place of the MLBM or the LBMA, excuse me, in London. But China also had some news yesterday that they were coming out with this gold fund, this, physical gold fund. And I think that there's a difference there. So we're going to have to talk to Kenneth about that. So anyway, regardless, Kenneth Shorchin will be here in about an hour. I know the clocks are a little bit off right now. I don't know why. I thought maybe yesterday when I tuned into Kevin Baker's show, I had gone back in time. And so, of course, I got up this morning and checked my Berenstain Bears covers of all my books I've collected now since we've been digging into that topic. And I'm still in the same dimension, apparently. So we haven't gone back in time, but maybe the world has stopped spinning quickly. I don't know what's going on, but we are like 6 minutes behind the whole network. And I'm not changing my clocks. I'm sticking with it. Somebody else someplace is going to have to make a change regardless. Also want to give you guys a heads up. The one and only Rebecca Roth will be on the KBS program this evening. If you guys are not tuning in to the KBS broadcast every night, what in the heck is wrong with you? You guys missed an amazing show last night with Nano Girl. Really, really, really good stuff. She's one of my very favorite contributors. Another one of my favorite contributors to the network, obviously, Rebecca Roth. She wrote Methodical Illusion. If you guys haven't seen that book yet, again, what are you doing? Get three copies, put one in your library, and give someone that you know that isn't quite over the fence on 9/11 yet, and give them a copy of that book. Also, she's going to be starting her very own broadcast here at TFR. I believe it starts Saturday at 2 p.m., and I think that is Central Time, my time, but I don't know, so we'll have to all tune in tonight to KBS show and to get more clarification. I do know it will be Saturday that Rebecca Roth will be starting her show, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that take off. It is going to be called Reality Check, and I really, really am excited about that. As well as hearing her tonight on KBS. Also, just as a heads up for the rest of the week, we've got a gentleman coming on the program tomorrow by the name of Stan Deo. Not sure if you guys have heard of him. Pretty impressive guy. We'll just say that. Gonna have to talk to him about some advanced technology, supercomputers, UFOs, liquid mercury found under ancient megalithic structures, and maybe even delve in a little bit to CERN. And I'll tell you what, if you guys don't know Stan Deo, he can handle all of that because he could probably build a CERN in his basement with him by himself if he wanted to. So absolutely astounded that we're going to have Stan Deo on the program tomorrow. Really looking forward to that. And then looks like 2 hours with some guy named Kev Baker on Friday. Not sure how that's going to pan out, but I remember last time it was about as much fun as I think we're legally allowed to have on the radio. So we're going to do it again, ladies and gentlemen. Kev's going to take some time out of his schedule to join us on Friday for the full 2 hours. We'll be talking about news and just kind of generally, you know, chewing the cud, I guess, where we want to go with that. Also, we got a lot of news to cover today. I appreciate you guys tuning into the broadcast. There is an amazing health story that I want to make sure I get to today, so I will eventually stop rambling here this morning. Major, major health story. You guys are going to love this. It has to do with Alzheimer's, and it has a lot to do with our guest yesterday, Robbie Holes, talking about this holistic healing. She wrote those two books, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing and The Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. You can find those on Amazon, but go back and listen to that program yesterday. What an amazing person, and one of my very favorite guests to have because she's just so insightful. It was funny. We talked a little bit after the program, and she was kind of concerned. This was great. You guys will love this. She was like, I wanted to really talk about chakras and energy manipulation, but I'm a little worried that it might be too deep for your audience. And I thought, wow, you know what? Our audience is the best and brightest audience on the planet, and they are willing to go anywhere. I mean, these are the same crew that tunes in for the Woo Crew and the Freaky Friday shows on Friday night. I just said, you know, Robbie, please feel free to come back and take us into the depths of your knowledge because there's a lot of people out there that will absolutely be able to keep up. Really, really great stuff yesterday, and can't wait to have Robbie Holes back on. Holes Wellness is her website if you guys want to go check her out. And also in the news, we've got some pretty impressive stuff regarding Greece, kicking the can down the road here potentially a little bit. We also talked a little bit about the IRS hack, so we'll get into that. And also some crazy science news today. I mean crazy science news on the microbiology front, and also DARPA now has, they've got a death ray. Yeah, so there you go. Happy to be a part of this whole team. Woohoo, death rays. All right. So let's get into the news right now. Really appreciate you guys all being along for the ride and appreciate all of you guys hanging out in the chat room. It is absolutely so cool to have you guys here. Let's talk about what's going on in the news. We've been talking quite a bit recently about the migrants and the refugees that are trying to leave the war-torn areas in North Africa and also the Middle East, making their way to the EU pretty much any way that they possibly can. I mean, I don't know if everybody has taken the minute out that they need to actually focus on the fact that these people are making a decision to leave the lands that they live in and have lived in forever, to get on a boat where people potentially don't speak their language and just go someplace, just go somewhere. I can't imagine how desperate you would have to be to actually make that happen. And I'll tell you, we here in America are super lucky that we've never seen war like this on our soil. And so, you know, this refugee situation, obviously, in the Mediterranean, still really, really bad. And now WikiLeaks, in the news today, they have now published two classified documents that were basically the outline for the EU's plan for military intervention against these migrant boats coming from Libya, okay? And so these documents, which were revealed on Monday evening, they outline a military operation endorsed by the European Union Military Committee against these cross-Mediterranean refugee transport networks and infrastructure. So again, a military response to the fact that, you know, these people who are now wanting to have a military response are, you know, absolutely on the hook as being responsible for this situation in the first place. You know, if all these NATO members now want to step up and say, oh, we've got to do something about this refugee crisis, and the answer is going to be military intervention, of course, we can't go into Libya because that looks like we're actually attacking Libya. So we have to wait until the vessels actually come out into the water, and then we're going to sink them. That's their plan right now. Genius, genius plan. You know, wouldn't want to actually mitigate the problem that these people actually created in the first place or do some sort of humanitarian stuff. Nope, let's just wage more war on Syria. Let's give Turkey $500 million of U.S. taxpayer money so that they can train 15,000 quote-unquote moderate rebels that did in fact become ISIS in the first place. I mean, this is just stupid, and it's not getting any better. But anyway, new documents now, military operation endorsed by the EU Military Committee against these cross-Mediterranean refugee transport networks. So you can kind of read between the lines there and see what they're going to do. The documents also attributed to the General Secretariat of the Council of the EU that the European Union now runs the risk of receiving negative publicity if casualties are attributed to action or inaction by the EU forces. So what they're saying is they are right now in between a rock and a hard place, because they're saying that there's going to be a lot of negative publicity if they don't do anything. And of course, there's going to be a lot of negative publicity if we lose another 1,000 people out in the Mediterranean over the next coming months. So obviously they need to do something. You guys can probably figure out by now. I don't support this whole military intervention. Obviously, if they can get into Libya and find the people who are actually getting paid to put these people on the boats, take over that job. How about that? How about instead of letting people extort money out of these people to put them on a boat to safety, why don't you just put boats to safety there and do it under the guise of this military intervention? That makes a lot more sense to me, and it actually is humanitarian. Of course, nobody listens to me or my ideas, so who knows what's going to happen. But anyway, military intervention probably forthcoming against these refugees, and they would probably rather that we don't talk about this or think about it. So that's what's happening over there. Not good stuff, and you guys can see my position on that is pretty firm at this point. Also, news out of the Maldives right now. The authorities in the Maldives arrested 3 opposition leaders and nearly 200 other people after clashes erupted between the police and protesters demanding the resignation of the country's president and the release of a jailed ex-leader. And with these arrests, nearly the entire opposition leadership behind last Friday's anti-government protests have been detained. An opposition lawmaker, Eva Abdullah, said this earlier this week. The arrests could probably exacerbate an acrimonious political climate in the Indian Ocean archipelago nation, which is still in its early years of democracy right now. So you can see there's probably some NGO here creating unrest, and the government that the people do not support arresting all of the people who are supporting the exiled government there right now and all of the protesters as well. So you could just see another situation where there is a flashpoint out there. I'm going to pause for just a second. 25 people in the chat this morning. So awesome. Johnny Whistles just joined us. So nice to see you guys. If I don't say hello to you guys by name, it's just because I waste enough time kind of goofing off on the radio as it is. But I really do appreciate all of you guys in there. There are some new faces this morning. Just love having you guys in there. What a cool forum this is. Okay, let's talk a little bit, too, about Israel right now. Disgusting. That's pretty much all I have to say. No, it isn't really. President Benjamin Netanyahu is now proposed, listen to this, he's proposed resuming the peace negotiations with the Palestinians but with the initial focus on identifying those Jewish settlements that Israel would be allowed to keep and would be able to expand. So here's the story. Benjamin Netanyahu essentially is saying, okay, we're ready to come back to the peace table, but the only thing that we want to talk about is all the illegal settlements that we've established since 1967. We want to kind of hash out which ones of those you're going to allow us to keep and which ones we can expand. And if we get through that, then we'll go ahead and talk about the rest of the peace accord, you know, however Palestine wants to do it. Not going to fly. I'm telling you that right now. It's not going to fly. When they asked about his position, when they asked the Palestinian president Abbas about that, he basically said all of the settlement activity had to stop completely before peace talks could even possibly resume, and that all of the core issues of the conflict with Israel needed to be addressed simultaneously. And I absolutely agree with that. There's no reason to allow Israel to continue settlement operations. They're destroying people's lives. We had the story last week that a bunch of Israeli settlers came in and destroyed about 800 olive trees. I'll tell you what, I'm trying to grow an olive tree right now, and it is difficult. I couldn't imagine trying to get an entire orchard of them going, and then to allow some people who really think that they have a claim on the land there, but I would argue that they do, coming in and destroying the heritage of the people who actually live there. It's just not good. Not good. Also, news out of China right now. China has basically decided that they're going to extend their operations and their Air Force operations. They're now going to become offensive as well as defensive. This is the first time, and this is a pretty major shift in policy. It has a lot to do with that CNN story that we talked about the other day, where there just happened to be a CNN guy in an airplane that was doing surveillance over these new bases that China is building out in the South China Sea. They are, of course, we're talking about the atolls and the these small islands that China has just, you know, they're basically going out and dumping land and creating new air bases and new military places. One of them, actually the airstrip that they're creating, has got the longest runway in the world, which means they could pretty much land anything, not pretty much, they could definitely land anything in their arsenal at this particular airbase. So the other day, there was a surveillance flight that happened to be manned by those brave people at CNN, and they received a whole bunch of warnings over the radio, actually eight of them, saying, you guys are in our territory and you need to get the heck out. What are you doing? And so now China has come up and they said they are going to absolutely be projecting power further beyond its borders at sea and more assertively in the air in order to safeguard its maritime position. So a lot of people saying right now this particular development that's going on in the South China Sea and elsewhere in the Pacific at the behest of China is probably going to be the flashpoint that brings us into some kind of skirmish between China. And it's pretty obvious right now that China is not going to stop building on these reefs. They're not going to stop continuing to build up their military navy in the area. And the United States, obviously, at this point is not really willing to kowtow to them. So what's going to happen? We're still going to be flying these missions over. We're still going to be trying to keep an eye on what these people are doing. And now China is changing their policy, saying, well, we're going to go ahead and be a little more assertive. So how long until one of these surveillance aircraft? And again, that one that was flying with the CNN guy, it was not very high. It wasn't like what you would typically expect of a 60,000 foot, you know, surveillance aircraft. This was, they could see it. You know, China's looking at you with some binoculars saying, hey, there's a plane right there. We need to do something about it. Not real clandestine. So really, to me, just kind of poking the bear here a little bit, and they really wanted to do it on CNN. They really wanted you guys to see, oh, just how bad China is. And now, what's going to happen next? What's the next story going to be? Well, it's going to be either shots across the bow at a Navy destroyer in the area, or it's going to be more stern warnings. Who knows what it's going to be? But again, there is another flashpoint there to worry about, so just want to kind of keep you guys in the loop. China changing its policy, saying they're going to be quite a bit more aggressive. Speaking of aggressive, Saudi Arabia yesterday carried out its 88th, that's two eights next to each other, execution so far this year. This does surpass now the total for all of 2014. Again, today's the 27th day of May. We're not quite through half of the year yet, so you can see this puts them on a path to be pretty much number one in the world in terms of execution. So good to go. Also, just a mental reminder that they're trying to become the head of the Human Rights Council at the UN. Right, Saudi Arabia right now in the bid for the run of head of the Human Rights Council. Can't think of any position that would be more applicable to Saudi Arabia. But anyway, the Interior Ministry did identify the latest to be put to death as Saudi's Awad al-Rahali and Lafi al-Shamari, who were both convicted of smuggling amphetamines, and they were executed in the northern region of Jarf. And the ministry said statements in statements carried by the Saudi press agency. So again, 87 people in 2014 total. We are at 88 today currently. So you can see, I wonder if we'll break 160 executions over there, especially for something like methamphetamines. That's kind of mental, in my opinion. But anyway, also let's jump down south of the border here. Some news out of Venezuela, the incarcerated Venezuela operation. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say that whole sentence again. The incarcerated Venezuelan opposition leader, Leopoldo Lopez, he leaked a self-made video from a very high-security military prison Monday night to announce a hunger strike and to call on all Venezuelans to hold a massive and peaceful protest against the government this upcoming Saturday. And today, this is what he says, today the immense majority of Venezuelans want change, but similar to us, the common citizen and Venezuela's democracy are incarcerated by a corrupt elite who are only interested in remaining in power. And this is what he said into a stationary camera. And this is the very first time that anyone in Venezuela has seen Mr. Lopez since he was incarcerated 15 months ago. He also noted that it had been a year and 3 months since his public arrest, which served to quiet the streets of protests in early 2014. And since then, he says more than 70 Venezuelans have been jailed for denouncing the Venezuelan state as corrupt, inefficient, repressive, and anti-democratic. And it's, you know, this guy is a Harvard-educated opposition leader. He is denouncing the government for its continued repression, the violence and corruption and impunity. He also, again, is staging a hunger strike now. Three basic demands: freedom for all political prisoners, an end to government persecution, repression, and censorship, and a set date for parliamentary elections with international observation from the OAS and EU. So I imagine that if you're down in Venezuela right now, it's interesting. There's a tech story today that I will probably try my best to get to, talking about Venezuela basically shutting down the internet right now because they don't want anyone to understand just how dismal their economy is actually going right now. The local currency down just 30% just this month already. And so Maduro came out on TV Monday and basically said, we got to get a handle on the situation. And people were like, what do you mean the economic? He said, no, Google, they're telling everybody about how bad our economic situation is. And this is awful. We can't control them because they're not here on our soil. So we're going to do whatever we can with our satellites to try and shut down Google. Don't fix the problem. Don't mess around with, you know, the economy and make things better. No, no, just shut down the information access so people don't realize how bad it is. That makes a lot more sense to me, too. Yay, socialism. All right. Also, in your Earth Change news, there's a little bit of story coming out. Well, it was a big story coming out of India, actually, right now. At least 800 people have died in a major heat wave that has swept across India, melting roads in New Delhi as temperatures neared 122 degrees Fahrenheit. That's about 50 degrees Celsius. And hospitals were on alert to treat victims of heat stroke, and authorities are advising people to stay indoors, and they are not predicting now an end in sight to these searing conditions. So again, India's meteorological department said it had issued a heat warning to several states where temperatures were forecast to top 45 degrees Celsius over the next few days. Again, hundreds of people, mainly from the poorest sections of society, die at the height of summer every year across the country, and tens of thousands suffer power cuts from an overburdened electrical grid. And streets were deserted in the capital city, which was the worst hit in the southern India. And again, only over 550 people have died there just in the capital city. So again, a lot of earth changes going on. If you're there in India, please do stay hydrated. Try and stay safe. I don't know if we have people listening from India, but it would be pretty rad if we did. Just saying. Okay, let's get into some national news here right now. We've got some pretty good news regarding President Obama's amnesty plan here. A federal appeals court refused to lift an injunction against President Obama's deportation amnesty in a ruling yesterday that delivers a second major legal setback to the administration and also keeps millions of illegal immigrants on hold. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit sided with the lower court that ruled Mr. Obama probably did break the law in taking unilateral action last year to grant amnesty from deportation. And the three-judge panel ruled 2-1 and shot down Mr. Obama's hopes of quickly restarting the amnesty, and also make it very likely that he will have to go to the Supreme Court in order to try and win this case. 25 states have joined Texas now in suing to halt the amnesty, arguing that they would bear new costs and having to issue driver's licenses to the illegal immigrants and also provide health care and other services to them. The state said the president's actions were unconstitutional or, at the very least, illegal. And first a district court and now a federal appeals court both have sided with Texas, serving as twin pillars rebuking or twin pillars of rebukeness to President Obama's three new strikes against this whole amnesty plan. Not really, really, really great news, but again, at least the whole thing is on hold right now. The rulings don't actually affect Mr. Obama's 2012 amnesty for the so-called Dreamers, which has already granted tentative legal status to more than 600,000 illegal immigrants. And it also doesn't take away Obama's ability to decline to deport illegal immigrants. So that means that really, none of the more than 4 million people who are in question right now are actually likely to be kicked out of the country. But the judges have ruled that Mr. Obama can't go further to grant many of those people an affirmative status, carrying all social benefits, including driver's license, tax credits, preferred work status under the terms of Obamacare. So a little bit of a holding pattern on this amnesty thing right now. But again, pretty clear right now that Barack Obama did do something very illegal by taking this action. And these states are in a position where they can show that it's going to cost them money. They've been inflicted with harm, which is, you know, exactly what you would expect to see going forward for this lawsuit to happen. And again, more judges ruling in favor of the states. So good news there. I agree. Nano Girl saying, oh, he's more of an emperor now. And that's, you know, these immigration rights people, listen to this, these immigration rights advocates are challenging Mr. Obama to use his authority to halt all their deportations until he can find a way to work with Congress on a new immigration law. So isn't that just like a liberal idiot to say something like that? We want you to use your authority to break the law. Spoiler alert, he doesn't have any authority to break the law. That's why he's being sued right now. Until we can find a way to change the law. I mean, talk about just stupid. I don't know. People are silly. We got to go to a 3-minute break, I think, guys. So you guys hang right here. We come back. We've got lots more national news to cover. We have some important economic stuff and also some health and science stuff, just like normal. So anyway, appreciate you guys being here. We'll be back in just a second. Keep it right here, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at SafeUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Aging for Truth with Joe Bannister. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out through that 3-minute break. And to all of you guys hanging out in the chat room right now, just so awesome to have you guys along for the ride. Kev Baker in there, Johnny Whistles in there, Nano Girls in there, and a whole slew of other regulars in the morning. And just love it. It's like a little family here with you guys every day. And I wouldn't do this without you guys. I just wouldn't do it. Not nearly as much fun sitting here talking to my cat. So really appreciate you guys hanging in here. Let's get back into the news right now. Obviously, this whole situation with the amnesty thing is going to come to a grinding halt for a little while. But, you know, getting into the economic stuff here in a second, I will give you a heads up. There was an interesting article that was basically written about a speech that the head of Goldman Sachs gave recently. And he was talking about how essentially the banking model is broken. There are not enough young people now to pay off this exorbitant amount of debt that exists. I think there's like a quadrillion dollars. There's some crazy number that you can't even think of anymore in terms of the derivative bubbles and all of this junk bond bubbles and all of this stuff that's going on. And so he basically said the only way to do it is to bring more people into the country. And I thought, man, if that's not a pretty amazing little bit of insight onto why this amnesty stuff is going on, why they're trying to bring people into the country who will help pay down this debt, and how the expansion of our population actually does play into our fiat currency, I thought it was really interesting and really telling. And I'll cover that again when we go over into the economic stuff, but I want to give a couple of quick other heads up here about the United States right now. There was a shooting that took place in New Mexico over the weekend, and this was a shooting of a law enforcement officer. This does not particularly look like this was a response to police brutality or somebody involved with the protest or just being upset with the police in general. This gentleman who shot this guy was pulled over in a vehicle and basically just shot this law enforcement officer square in the face right there. The officer did pass away, and again, super tragic. Not the way to handle situations here out and there. But this guy, not a good dude, had a rap sheet about 10 years long, burglary, all kinds of horrible, horrible things on here. So just kind of give you guys a heads up that that is what happened there in New Mexico. We did lose a law enforcement officer, and he did not appear to be a bad guy in any way, shape, or form. But the suspect that they are painting a picture of definitely seemed like a bad dude. So not good, not good stuff there. Also, speaking of not good, the death toll is still rising in Texas right now. Huge, huge sections of Houston, which is, again, the fourth most populous city in the United States, are all now underwater as a result of colossal flooding that continues to sweep across the southern United States. At least two people were reported dead in Houston's flooding as of yesterday morning, with at least 10 other deaths across the region over the weekend, now all being blamed on the water. And heavy rain and winds have complicated the matters for citizens of the Lone Star State in recent days. And a flash flood watch remains in effect for Houston through yesterday afternoon, with rain expecting to fall throughout the day. City could see things getting worse before it gets any better. So again, if you're down there in Texas, please, please, please be careful. Send your thoughts and prayers to the people that are in Houston that are being affected by this and all of the surrounding areas. I know Aaron and Mel both kind of right in it right now. They said the other day that their street was a river. Really, really scary stuff. People don't really understand just how dangerous floods can be. And Greg Abbott, the governor down there, has already declared a state of disaster across 24 counties. But again, more rain still scheduled in the forecast there, and just want to give our support and encouragement to anybody down there dealing with that nonsense. I want to take a quick minute to talk about the story from Missouri. This is what I think is the high water mark for the day here, and especially for us here in Missouri. There's a gentleman. His name is Jeff Mazansky. I don't know if you guys have heard of him. People have put billboards up in his honor. He is a 62-year-old grandfather. He is the only person in the state of Missouri right now currently spending having under the sentence of a life in prison. So he's serving a life in prison right now because of three marijuana convictions that actually happened a long time ago. So back in September, Truth and Media actually highlighted the plight of Jeff Mazansky. He, again, Missouri grandfather. He's been sentenced to life in prison without parole for three nonviolent marijuana convictions under Missouri's since repealed three strikes rule. They have a persistent drug offender statute also since repealed. And the 62-year-old low-level pot dealer had been caught in a tough-on-crime loophole as, again, Missouri's only inmate serving a life sentence for nonviolent marijuana convictions. He said in an interview earlier this week that in his 22 years in prison, he has seen guys who have committed murder come and go and then come back again. And anyway, the good news, ladies and gentlemen, yesterday, the Missouri governor, Jay Nixon, actually commuted Mazansky's sentence, rendering him eligible for immediate parole. This is absolutely fantastic news. Republican Representative Shane Dogan, who authored a letter signed by approximately 130 other Missouri legislators, asked Governor Nixon to grant clemency for Mazansky, and he said, "I am just glad the governor did the right things. Drug addicts, drug users, and they all need rehabilitation before they need incarceration." And also a change.org petition that was begging for Mazansky's release had been signed by more than 400,000 people. So the Missouri Department of Corrections spokesperson David Owen told the Riverfront Times yesterday that Mazansky will now have a parole hearing this summer and should find out whether parole will be granted within the next 3 to 6 weeks after that hearing. So absolutely fantastic news. It drives me crazy to live in a state like this, which is so draconian. I could mention here really quick that Louisiana is moving to strike down some of their draconian punishments for people who are caught with marijuana, but they are still about six times as bad as any other state out there. So rule for the weekend here, guys, never ever go to Louisiana. Little side funny note, I got offered a whole lot of money to move to Louisiana by Northrop Grumman to go work in Avondale, and I literally hung up on the guy, told him it would take $1 million cash up front to get me to move to Avondale, Louisiana and work in the mud. Not going to happen. So thank you, but no thank you. Anyway, moving on to the economy news right now. Again, Kenneth Shorten Jr. will be joining us in about a half an hour. So we won't get too deep into the economic stuff today, but I do have to give you guys a little bit of a heads up on a couple of things here. We'll get into the markets. The Dow up right now, 109 points in early trading, 18,151. S&P also up about a half a percent this morning at 2116. Dollar index also on the rise, but just a skosh, $97.41. The euro also on the rise this morning, 1.0899. We're almost at that 1.09 mark. Bitcoin, dropping just a touch this morning at $237.77. Gold down a touch today, 1,187. $1,187 will get you an ounce of gold. Might be a good time to buy since we're off of the 1,220 high from the other day. That's a pretty significant return if it gets back to there. You buy in low, $16.67 big cents for an ounce of silver, and crude oil sitting pretty squarely today at $58.28 big cents. So that's what's going on there. A lot of rumors flying around yesterday regarding Greece. basically, they came out pretty early in the day and said, yeah, we're not going to be able to make this payment. It's not going to happen. We're just not going to be able to do this. So that was early in the day. Later on in the afternoon, there were some reports coming out of media saying that the Greece is allegedly going to be allowed to skip the next payment to the IMF. This payment was supposed to be scheduled on June 5th, and if they skip it, that will hopefully give them time to negotiate a funding deal without defaulting if it manages to reimburse all of June's repayments by the end of June. So there is the possibility of putting together several payments that Greece would need to make to the IMF in the course of June, and then just to make one payment, according to a senior Eurozone official. But again, the struggling country due to pay the IMF 300 million euros just on June 5th, and that is the first of four June payments totaling 1.6 billion euros. And Greece, again, could only skip this payment if it provides markets and citizens with a trustworthy plan of a funding deal, because missing a payment could obviously instigate an alarm on the markets and possibly a bank run. We've kind of been witnessing a silent bank run going on in Greece right now by people who are paying attention and saying, you know what, I don't think that that thin line between my bank account and the government's bank account is thick enough for me. I'm going to go ahead and pull my cash out. Cannot say I blame you guys, but while Greece does intend to liberalize its economy, amend its pension system, and run a reasonable primary budget surplus, its creditors, the Troika, are demanding oppressively high surplus targets, making Athens' goal pretty much unreachable, according to the Greek finance minister Varoufakis. And he said all this yesterday. He says, our government cannot accept, will not accept, a cure that over a five-year period has proved far worse than the disease. And it's nice that these guys are still saying smart-sounding things. So there is a little bit of hope left for Greece, as far as I'm concerned. Last week, the Greek interior minister said the country would not be able to pay the next installation of these $300 million to the IMF on June 5th unless it received extra financial aid from the Troika itself. Athens currently owes billions of euros to the Troika of international lenders, the IMF, EBC, and the European Commission. It is unable to pay without an additional 7.2 billion euro bailout. That is what's going on with Greece right now. So again, no real definitive, we're going to kick the can down the road, but you can see how if the can kicking is a potential, then they're going to take advantage of it if they can. But at the same time, you got to kind of believe in Varoufakis and also Tsipras saying we're not going to go down this road of austerity with our people. So if that's what's going to happen, if it takes us another month to figure out that we're not going to do that, they're still not going to do it. I think Athens will absolutely burn to the ground if these people realize what's going on in terms of austerity coming down on them. So we'll have to keep an eye on it. We'll ask Ken what his impression of the situation is here in a little while as well. Wanted to say really quick, we touched on this Goldman Sachs thing already, but Andrew Wilson, he is the European chief executive of Goldman Sachs Asset Management, and he is now urging, quote-unquote, a new way of thinking to generate growth, to work off the debt, and especially in spite or in the light of an aging population. This report came out of The Telegraph, but he basically outlines the fact that there's been a demographic shift, not as many young people to help pay down the debt. So this is what he says, is this demographic shift means we need to look at more creative policies, including immigration and workforce expansion, in order to find a way to pay down the debt. So if you understand that our government is a corporation and it's actually being run by idiot bankers, you could probably go ahead and include Mr. Andrew Wilson in that category of idiot bankers. And that's what he's saying. He's saying this demographic shift means that we got to look at a more creative policy, including immigration and workforce expansion. That is a big red flag in my mind and tells you a lot about why Obama's amnesty program is so important, because it's not important to Obama, but it's important to people who are running places like Goldman Sachs. That's essentially what's going on right now. Also, the IRS did get hacked, and this is a pretty big story. Sophisticated criminals used an online service run by the IRS to accept personal tax information from more than 100,000 taxpayers, part of an elaborate scheme to steal identities and to claim fraudulent tax returns. The IRS came out with this story just yesterday, and the thieves accessed a system called Get Transcript, where taxpayers can get tax returns and other filings from previous years. And in order to access the information, the thieves cleared a security screen that required certain knowledge about a taxpayer, including social security numbers, date of birth, tax filing status, and also the street address. So the IRS commissioner, John Koshikin, said that these are not amateurs. This is probably a well-organized crime syndicate. And again, when you got the head of the IRS coming out and saying, hey, we just got hacked by a well-organized crime syndicate, kind of makes you wonder if A, if it's real, or B, if this is just, say, we're going to get your appetites wet for some sort of global cyber attack that's coming down. Personally, you guys want to hack the IRS? Awesome. Take it down. Take their website down. Do it all. I don't care. We need to take this whole network of evildoers down. But at the same time, they are putting people – they're putting people's personal information in jeopardy. And how they did it, let me just say real quick. We're talking about this system called the Get Transcript. So this is a special page that you can access to get older transcripts that you've already sent to the IRS, and I guess the system was targeted between February and mid-May. They have now temporarily shut it down. But they say in all about 200,000 attempts were made from questionable email domains, and more than 100,000 of those attempts successfully cleared the authentication hurdles. So the agency right now is determining how many fraudulent tax refunds were claimed this year using this information from the stolen transcripts, and the preliminary estimate they're saying is probably only about $50 million. No big deal. Only about $50 million. No big deal, right? And it, you know, whatever. Okay, let's see here. Do we want to cover this? No, I'm going to move on just in case we run out of time. Oh, I'll give you this quick story, too. Charter Communications did acquire Time Warner Cable yesterday in a very, very large deal. This was $78.7 billion to acquire, again, Time Warner Cable. Okay, checking out chat room. Sorry about that. Again, so that's a huge deal, and we'll see what happens as Charter does end up swallowing Time Warner there. Okay, let's go ahead and jump into the science and tech stuff because I'm afraid I will get too far behind and not get into this other health story that I think you guys are really going to enjoy. Got to give you a quick heads up about China right now and the international tech stuff. China has now included a cybersecurity bill in a draft national security law. This is the latest in a string of moves by Beijing to bolster the legal framework protecting the country's information technology. China has recently advanced a wave of policies to tighten cybersecurity after the former NSA contractor Edward Snowden disclosed that U.S. spy agencies planted code in American tech exports to snoop on overseas targets. So the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress, which is China's legislature, they reviewed a cyberspace sovereignty clause in a proposed national security law, according to a draft proposed online this week and after its second reading in late April. And they say that the country must achieve security and control in internet and information core technology, key infrastructure, and important data and information systems. It's also said that China's banking infrastructure will need to be strengthened and its financial systems improved to withstand international risks and shock. The bill doesn't actually give any specific guidelines for how this is going to be implemented. But in addition to that national security law, a controversial anti-terrorism draft law is also still being reviewed by the NPC Standing Committee, a group of about 200 members, which often does adopt laws after three readings. And the president, I can't say his name, Jinping, who leads a newly established National Security Commission, has said that China's security covers a wide array of areas, including politics, culture, the military, the economy, technology, and the environment. And the sweeping national security law has broad implications for ruling Communist Party's governance of society, including powers for dealing with, quote-unquote, harmful moral standards. So that's what the war is really against in China, your ability to think clearly or think independently, because that might to them represent moral or harmful moral standards. And it kind of goes in line with the stuff that David Cameron proposed this week coming out of the UK, saying that, you know, that even if you've been living by the law, we haven't been meddling in your lives quite enough. And if you have any thoughts in your head that are anti-democratic, well, we're going to come down on you. So I think you can see how this draconian control initiative is bleeding across borders and is getting worse and worse and worse. Speaking of worse and worse, DARPA has the latest toy. You guys probably ought to hear about this. It's called HELADS, H-E-L-L-A-D-S. Is one step closer to arming aircrafts and drones with an exceptionally powerful and destructive weaponized laser beam set to begin testing at the White Sands Military Range in New Mexico later this summer. The High Energy Liquid Laser Area Defense System, or HELADS, has been developing an electronically and optically efficient laser for output from a lighter and more compact platform through DARPA contractor General Atomics. And essentially, they have a laser. They're not putting it on planes quite yet. They're still going to be using it for ground-based stuff. But let's just put it into perspective here. The U.S. Ponce, which is a Navy boat, right, they already have on board the Navy's laser weapon system. That produces a beam of light capable of destroying electronic systems and overheating engines on drones, small boats, small aircraft. It can also explode warheads. Those lasers are just 30 kilowatts, right? 30 kilowatts, 30. The lasers used in the HELADS system are 10 times more powerful, ladies and gentlemen. 10 times, again, between 150 and 300 kilowatts. Unbelievable. And they can, they've been able to successfully test this high-quality beam for more than 30 seconds at a time, with the only limit right now being the scope of the battery life. But there's more. Remembering that the goal of this is to put this framework in the air, the same contractor that strengthened and streamlined the laser has also developed the jet-powered Avenger drone, which generates enough energy in flight to continually recharge the battery, giving the weapon unlimited ammunition for an agile unmanned aircraft, capable of speeds of about 450 miles an hour, and it can stay aloft for 18 hours at a time, but just not yet. So they're very close, again, to being able to mount this laser system, again, 10 times more powerful than the laser systems you can go see on the USS Ponce right now. Very, very scary stuff here, guys, because they're going to mount this to planes, and they're going to be hitting people with it. And I think that's the where we're going to go. Got to give you this crazy story, too, and this is pretty deep, so I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail, but this has to do with microbiology. There is a gentleman named Latha Venkataraman. He is the associate producer of applied physics at Columbia University, and he and his researchers have now designed a new technique to create, listen to this, a single molecule diode. And in doing so, they have developed molecular diodes that perform 50 times better than all previous designs. And this is the absolute smallest that we could possibly get with micro technology, ladies and gentlemen. There is not a way to get smaller. This literally represents the very limit of miniaturization. They have a single molecule, a single atom that they constructed, and they can run it, they can run 0.1 microamps through it consistently, and it behaves exactly like a diode. So again, amazing technology. I'm going to throw this into the chat room because I want Nano to see it. I just find this to be absolutely incredible. But again, the first single molecule diode, this takes us into a whole nother realm for nanoscale devices, a whole nother realm for biotechnology. And this article was just published on the 25th of May in Nature Nanotechnology, and just amazing stuff. I'll just give you the results here. It's more stuff that I don't really understand. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I do. So I'll put that in the link so you guys can check it out. But again, pretty substantial improvement in microbiology. It's just, pretty remarkable. And it's again, moving fast and furious into this nanotechnology realm. And, stuff like this is just putting it further and further ahead. Pretty crazy. Do we want to talk about that or this or that? Let's talk about Australia right now. Australia is having a pretty big problem with these crazy ants, and that's actually what they're called. They're called crazy ants, and they're on an island outside of Australia called Christmas Island. They're planning on bringing in a Malaysian wasp. They're going to import this Malaysian wasp in order to wage war against a plague of these destructive crazy ants. And this tiny wasp, it's only about 2 millimeters long. It doesn't sting or build nests, but it is hoped that it will severely dent the crazy ant population. So, and it will do this because scientists believe it will prey on the insects that produce the sugary substance called honeydew that the crazy ants consume. So they hope to reduce the ants' food supply, interrupt the breeding, and then potentially stopping them from building these devastating super colonies. And Park Australia, which is a federal government agency that oversees Australia's leading national parks, is backing the move to import the micro wasps to Christmas Island later this year. And these crazy ants were thought to have originally been brought to the island by Southeast Asian traders in sea cargo, and a horde of these pests is blamed for killing tons of millions of Christmas Island's red crabs over the last 20 years. So the loss of these crabs has a very negative impact on the entire island's ecosystem. So the importance the importing of species to deal with another destructive species hasn't always been stunningly successful in Australia. The cane toad was introduced in Queensland back in 1930s, and it was an attempt to eradicate the cane beetle, which damaged the sugar cane crops. But instead, the toad spread across northern Australia and has been blamed for the decimation of native wildlife. But they have studied this wasp, and researchers say nothing bad is going to happen. So there you go. Everything's going to be fine. We're just going to bring all of these miniature wasps into Australia and hope that it goes very, very well. Let's hop into this health news because I do want to make sure I cover this story. I think it has a lot of correlation between what we were talking about with Robbie yesterday. They have now introduced a fully non-invasive cure for Alzheimer's, guys. You guys are not going to believe this. Listen to this. So Alzheimer's, I didn't know this, was the number sixth cause of death in the United States. It presently takes more lives than prostate and breast cancers combined. In fact, it is reported to affect 50 million individuals worldwide. Now, a team from the Queensland Brain Institute at the University of Queensland, Australia, has developed a promising solution, and after trials showed a full restoration of memory in 75% of the tested lab mice The team invested real hope into the idea that this disease may soon be treated conventionally, and the researchers created this non-invasive ultrasound technology that clears the brain of neurotic amyloid plaques, and these are the structures that are responsible for memory loss and a decline in cognitive function in Alzheimer's patients. Published in Science Translational Medicine, the report shares that if a person has Alzheimer's disease, it's usually due to the buildup of two different types of lesions, amyloid plaques and neurofibrosis tangles, really, is what that word means. But again, right now, at present, there is no pharmaceutical drugs, there's no vaccines on the market, and there's nothing really that can prevent or remedy this disease. It's the team here now in Queensland describes this technique that they've developed as using a particular type of ultrasound called focused therapeutic ultrasound, which non-invasively beams sound waves into the brain tissue. And by oscillating them at incredibly high speed, these sound waves are able to greatly open up the blood-brain barrier, which is the layer that protects the brain against bacteria, while also stimulating the brain's microglial cells to activate. And the microglial cells are basically waste removal cells that help clear out the toxic beta amyloid clumps responsible for the worst symptoms in Alzheimer's. And amazingly enough, the team did report fully restoring the memory function in 75% of the mice that they tested on, with zero damage to the surrounding brain tissue. And they even found the rodents to display improved performance in three different memory categories. One was a maze, one was a test to see if they could get them to recognize new objects, and one which would get them to remember places that they should avoid. And they were very successful in all three of those things. I think this is absolutely amazing. And what a novel concept, using sound to heal things. I think that our good friend Robbie Holes would be all over this particular thing. I'll drop this link in the chat so you guys can see it. But I think that is just absolutely amazing. And again, isn't it funny how by going back into history to discover the ways that things possibly were done in the past might actually give us some insight on how things can be helped now. And I just like that. And I like the fact that it's non-invasive. And again, that is a huge, huge problem, Alzheimer's these days. And being able to do that non-invasively, just super, super cool. Lots more health and stuff. I couldn't get to some other science and tech news. Also, I could not get to all of that's at redpillreports.com under the show section there at the top of the page. We're going to go to this 3-minute break, and when I come back, we will have Kenneth Shorten Jr. on. We'll be talking about all things economic, Greece, the Fed, dollar, what in the heck is going to happen, and how we get through this transition. I appreciate you guys being here. I think you guys will enjoy this, and I will see you on the other side. Be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And for all of you guys in the chat room, it is so nice to have you guys along for the ride and everybody on the live streams right now. Just so appreciative to all of you guys. So nice to be here with you this morning. Very excited to be welcoming the one and only Kenneth Shortjen Jr. back to the program. He, of course, is a contributor to the DailyEconomist.com and also RogueMoney.net. Let me make sure I get that correct. And also SecretsOfTheFed.com. So much insight that this gentleman brings to the table, and there's always so much going on in the economy to talk about. We like to do it. We like to bring him back as often as he's willing to come on to the program. So for you guys who don't know Ken, just a quick background here. He is a historian in his primary field of study. He's also an investor in the real world. He has a very keen perspective on all the different facets of the financial world. He's owned his own businesses, owned his own corporations. He's also been an investor in many different markets like securities, real estate, currency trading, international trust. His main desire, really, ladies and gentlemen, is just to try and provide all of us with some actual understanding of the markets right now, especially in a world where the market fundamentals don't seem to apply to anything. I learned once that there was this whole supply and demand issue. Doesn't seem to be in play anymore. So trying to talk to people out there who are intelligent enough to figure out what is actually going on with the system is something that's really important, I think. And so really happy to be welcoming Kenneth back to the program. Ken, thank you for taking some extra time out of your schedule to join us this morning.
Thanks, JD. No problem, and I appreciate the time.
Oh, appreciate you being able to be here with us. So we had you on a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about a lot of really important stuff. Obviously, we were kind of on the fence about whether or not Greece was going to be able to make this particular payment to the IMF. We talked a lot about these new developments inside of the Fed and things like that, BRICS developments. We've talked about the war on cash. So much kind of up in the air right now, Ken. Where do you think is the most important place to start right now today?
Well, if I could, there was a interesting thing I put together, an article over the weekend over at roguemoney.net, and I called it the full spectrum dominance over currency and trade for China. And this is something that's important because if you listen to a lot of different analysts out there, Joel Skousen for one, Jim Rickards, they are telling part of the story, but their conclusions really seem to be against the way the path is going. You know, as you mentioned, the new Chinese gold fund. Really what that is it's a competitor to the GLD ETF, only this is backed by physical gold.
Right.
This is what somebody like Eric Sprott did up in Canada. He created a silver fund that was backed by physical silver to go after the SLV. So it's very, you know, China's trying to bring people who invest in gold away from the U.S. paper markets and start investing in Shanghai, start investing in Hong Kong, start investing in China, pulling money out of the system there to go to physical gold because most people who buy the ETFs, they have no idea that they're not really investing in gold. They think it is gold, but they don't realize it's just pure paper and just a complete scam, Wall Street scam. But one of the things that Skousen mentioned is he has a belief that all of this is going on is leading to World War III, and there's going to be a nuke strike and by China and Russia, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
Rickards believes that all roads lead to the IMF. He has come out and put his complete reputation on the IMF.
Hmm.
Well, there's four different things, and Jim Willie has broken a lot of this information. One, it goes back to when China purchased the J.P. Morgan headquarters, but they also, it appears, purchased a huge stake in the Federal Reserve.
Really?
Yeah. Now, for most people, they think of, okay, the Federal Reserve is a private corporation, yada, 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 but it has shareholders,
mm-hmm.
and the banks are the shareholders. And the banks, whether they be domestic or international, can sell their shares as they see fit. And any corporation is usually run by whichever shareholder has a controlling interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so the belief is, at least from Jim Willie, from his sources, is that China not only bought the headquarters, but because of the London whale and the lost Chinese gold that fiasco came from that, $100 billion. They also were able to get J.P. Morgan's primary share in the Federal Reserve, and that they potentially control the direction that the Fed is going right now.
Wow, that's a pretty big story, and I don't understand why we haven't heard anything about that, Ken.
Because, you know, a lot of this has to remain in the speculation until you get some actual meaty information from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Fed is as private as it gets, so they're not going to report who their shareholders are.
Right.
And you got to, you know, the G. Edward Griffins spend years trying to, you know, get this type of evidence. So that's one of the speculations of it, that they control the Fed. Then we have to go to the IMF. Why does China even want to get involved in the IMF? Some people say it's to kill it, but really it's a much bigger thing. Do you know the U.S. and Congress have not given any money to the IMF in over 2 years?
You know, I think Jim Willie put that out in an article recently, and I read that, and I guess I didn't know that. That really surprised me to find that out.
Right, and because the U.S. isn't funding it, Europe isn't funding it either. So nobody's funding it but one country, China. And if you're the one funding the IMF, guess who gets to control and direct where the funds go?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would China, if they've already recreated the infrastructure platforms, their own SWIFT, the BRICS Bank, the AIIB, if you've already created all that, why would you go after the West?
Yeah, that's the $64,000 question, man.
The primary reason is because the yuan, their currency, only does about 12% of global transactions right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the dollar's global transaction has been declining over the past 5 years, but the yuan is still number five on the list. What they need to do to be able to free float their currency big time is they have to back it with something. Most, just like the dollar is backed by the treasury, the eurozone is, the ECB is backed by euro bonds, so that China needs to be able to sell yuan bonds all across the world. Because once you have, countries buying into the yuan, then they recognize their currency and it's good anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're going to do is they're going to use the IMF once they get in to that basket, the SDR basket, they're going to use that facility to start selling yuan bonds all over the place.
And so
then all of a sudden their currency gets recognized, floated, and mm-hmm. used. And so that's where they're going to, and then they'll eventually kill it.
Well, how does that relate to, I mean, the IMF came out yesterday with a pretty significant statement saying that the yuan was no longer undervalued. Is that, I mean, is this just another step towards them getting into the SDR basket?
Yeah, but with the IMF, since it's bankrupt, like I said, there's only one country that's actually funding it.
Right.
They're a bank that has no money.
Well, Greece kind of funded it a little bit.
true. But the real point is the IMF, if it's running, their statements are not their own. Their statements have always been either what the U.S. has told them to say, or now what China is telling them to say. So you can't really believe, you know, unless you want to have Lagarde come out and give her numerology speech again.
Right.
You know, what comes out of the IMF is not worth paying attention to.
Okay.
What comes out of China in regards to their monetary policy and how it affects the IMF, i.e. looking to join the SDR basket. That's the real crux.
Gotcha.
So you've got, if this is true, the speculation, they have control of the Fed. They have control of the IMF. They're looking at, oh, and of course we go back to 2013, the historic deal between Russia and China to sell oil in yuan and rubles.
Uh-huh.
So they have control over the petrodollar. And then, of course, the BRICS Bank is now coming out with their multi-currency financial system, which is going to set up and facilitate all nations to be able to do direct bilateral trade without having to go through the dollar. That's what the purpose of this is. And all of this is eventually being set up for a backing of gold.
That's
right. Step by step by step by step. So when people come out and say that that China and Russia want to go after the U.S. and they're going to have to use military and they're going to have to take a – no. Uh-oh. There's already a blueprint in place. The blueprint goes back to Rothschild. Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws. Well, scratch out a nation's and just put in the world's money.
Right.
Give me control of the world's money, and I care not who makes its laws. Because once you control the financial system, you don't need war.
That's right.
You have control.
That's right. I want to talk a little more about this physical fund, though, that China has developed, because it seems like every time – you just mentioned also this BRICS multi-currency thing that's coming out. It seems like every time I turn around, Ken, there's some new element to this BRICS foundation. And I wanted to just – you know, I know they have some sort of physical trading platform for gold that was meant to replace the MLBA. Is the gold physical fund that I just read about the other day, are those the same thing, or is this a separate – are those separate issues?
Oh, they're separate issues, but they're all under the same guise.
Okay.
See, the Shanghai Gold Exchange is a physical market.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there's two rules that are in the Shanghai Gold Exchange. One, there's no naked shorting. You have cash or you don't make a transaction.
Right.
Secondly, the COMEX has not done a delivery of metal for over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer a futures market. It is simply an insurance and derivatives platform that J.P. Morgan and all the other banks use, the Western banks use, to protect their derivatives and their naked shorts. I mean, that was the reason why Merrill Lynch had to get couldn't go bankrupt in 2008 and had to be swallowed up by Bank of America and J.P. Morgan, is because they had enough naked shorts in the silver market to collapse the entire monetary system.
Ah, okay.
So it got forced on the banks. They had to buy it just so they could protect those silver shorts from causing a derivatives collapse.
Okay. Well, so in terms of this physical fund, you know, most of us here in America, we're not really familiar with a gold fund like that. So how is it going to work exactly?
Well, it's going to be similar to the ETF, the gold ETF, the GLD that's mm-hmm. on in the, you know, the U.S. markets.
Mm-hmm.
Only this is assured to be backed by physical metals. And I suspect that it's just emerging, but I suspect that if somebody wanted to claim delivery of their physical metals, then they could do that at any time.
Right.
But as you know, just because paper is really toxic in many different investments, not all paper is. If paper is backed by an actual physical commodity,
uh-huh.
then it's the most efficient way to function and do investing.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
You know, you can't, it's like where the concept of gold or money came from. You know, if a farmer in one area wanted to go trade with another farmer, he's not going to drag his cows everywhere he goes.
Right.
And the other guy's not going to drag, you know, this wheelbarrow of cheese everywhere they go. They'll meet. They'll agree on a thing. They'll give a form of payment, which is universally agreed. Back then it was gold.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's money, or, you know, for the longest time it was money backed by gold. Now it's fiat currency.
Uh-huh.
So that's the transaction go, and then they do their shipping and doing outside of that. That's what this fund is you have control over gold, but it's done in Asia, it's offshore, so one, can't be confiscated.
Uh-huh.
Two, you don't have the threat that the COMEX is not going to be able to deliver your gold and instead is going to just have to give you cash settlement. This is going to be an opportunity for, and you know what, China really doesn't care about the, forgive my saying, the dumb American who doesn't understand the difference between an ETF and physical gold.
Right.
They're selling to, and here's where it's important. There was an article that came out from China Daily a few weeks ago, and it was really innocuous, but there's a vastly important statement at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
The gold traded is expected to become a significant component of transactions by Belt and Road companies or countries. And Belt and Road is just another name for the Silk Road.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I saw that as well, that they're planning on like 60 new mining and gold type of initiatives that are being funded by BRICS all around that whole Silk Road area. Is that the same article?
Yeah, but it goes even further. Component of transactions. That means that all trading along the Silk Road is going to be gold-backed.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it does.
And right now, it is estimated that there are 65 countries along that route and 4.4 billion people, which is more than half the population.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got 65 countries, 4.4 billion people all bought into the system, okay, What does that mean? That means you have reached over critical mass.
That's right.
And that will instantly make the dollar no longer the reserve currency by de facto.
Yeah. Who would want it? Why would you want it at that point? If you could get money where you could actually get gold from it, why would you want a dollar?
Exactly.
Doesn't make any
sense. So for the people who think there's going to be this big Bretton Woods, and here's the thing. Here's the thing that people have to get out of their heads too. The U.S. has control of the reserve currency with a dollar. China does not want control of the reserve currency. That's the key thing. They want the reserve currency to be gold and stand neutral on its own, where all other currencies are valued in relation to gold,
mm-hmm.
not in relation to the UN, but in relation to gold.
Well,
and so, you know, back when we used to control the price of gold at $20.42 until 1933, and then it was bumped up to $35, well, that has always been the wrong way to deal with gold. Okay? A country can print any amount of money that they want, especially if it was done by the Treasury, not by a private central bank.
Mm-hmm.
But then the value of gold should be able to fluctuate in relation to how much money supply you have. When you force a commodity, a backed commodity, at $35, it limits your ability to expand the money supply, especially if your production goes way up because of international trade.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to expand the money supply and contract it using interest rates as the economy, you know, dictates. And by allowing gold to rise and fall in value as relation to your currency, that allows for even the Keynesian wet dream, you know,
right,
where they can expand that, while it's not going to affect inflation a whole lot, because if people want to protect their wealth, all they got to do is buy gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings me back to this gold fund idea, because I'm wondering, we're talking about China, you know, essentially backing their money with gold, but where does that, how does that actually, I mean, is this physical gold fund going to be the backing? Are they trying to coax some of the gold away from the population by offering them, you know, actual interest rates above 0.25% on their holdings? Because I read an article that India was kind of thinking about doing this, and India was trying to do it because apparently they have a whole bunch of temples there that are like Fort Knox, and they have allegedly like 19,000 tons of gold in private holdings inside of India. And so that they were kind of trying to come up with a way to get some of that gold outside of the temples, or, you know, to be invested in the government. And then so then I read this thing about China, and I thought, well, is that China trying to do the exact same thing? Once they get all the investment from the population, that will be the basically the foundation for the currency? Or is there another place where the actual gold foundation is going to be at, Ken?
Well, what the fund does is it gets a way to get international investment into the country,
mm-hmm.
because China is looking to expand their markets. You know, the New York Stock Exchange, you can pretty much have a broker from China able to transact the New York Stock Exchange, the City of London, in the German DAX or wherever. But China, Shanghai is just really emerging. Hong Kong is always there.
Mm-hmm.
Hong Kong's been there. But Shanghai is trying to bypass Hong Kong and trying to become, it's really what its moniker is, it's going to be the gold capital of the world.
Wow.
So you can have all these Asian countries that are part of the ASEAN complex investing in, but you want to get Western investors in.
Okay.
You want to get the Jim Rogers and you know, all those start investing in and promoting Shanghai. it'll start sucking money out of the U.S. markets, out of the European markets, and into this gold fund. Now, the point of this is that Shanghai already has its own supply of gold.
Okay.
The Chinese government has its supply of gold. The old Chinese families have their huge, you know, the secret banking system.
Right.
Has their supply of gold. There's plenty of gold in there. India, I would sort of take India with a grain of sand,
uh-huh.
because India tried to, one, cut off the importing of gold.
Yeah.
They were done that. That was when the previous leader, who was a U.S. puppet, trying to keep their people from buying gold and trying to stay into the dollar system. That
right.
was what that was all about.
Okay.
All that gold that's in the temples, they were trying to lease it. Well, lease is just another name for selling it.
Yep.
So they've been trying that, and the people, you want to start a riot? I'll tell you how much, the people in India, you've got 1.4 billion people in India, I believe.
Okay.
Close to that.
Yeah.
On average, this is average, even the poorest destitute, on average, each person in India has about 22 ounces of gold.
What? Are you serious?
In jewelry or in whatever, yeah.
Holy cow.
22 ounces per capita.
That's a significant amount of holdings these days, especially if the true value of gold ever actually comes out. What do you think about China's true holdings then? Because I hear 30,000 tons all the time, and I was thinking, well, if India privately has got 19, it wouldn't be hard to imagine that China, you know, on the total side might have 30.
Well, yeah, and you know, this is the thing is gold is going to be part of a trade note, but it's not going to be limited. What China wants to do is wants to create currencies and trade notes, lines of credit that are based on commodities. Not everybody has enough gold to be able to satisfy their economy. They understand that. But take a look at Mexico. Mexico has tons still of silver mines.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, their entire economy used to run really well because they had a silver-backed currency.
Mm-hmm.
You have the mining operations down in South America. Well, a lot of them may not have gold, but they've got iron, they've got copper, they've got other things that they can use to back a line trade note. And use that as payment back and forth for produced goods out of China. The key thing with China is they're now the manufacturing capital of the world.
That's right.
And they're more than happy to trade their goods to keep their people employed. And that's China's biggest important thing. We're going to keep people working.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have so much amalgamation of cultures within China that if you don't keep them satisfied, their biggest fear is a rebellion.
Right.
So they're going to keep pumping out goods, and they have to find markets for it. And if you can't, if nations in this global recession can't afford to buy your consumer goods, then you have to give them, you have to create consumers.
That's
and
right.
By creating consumers is you give them an alternative to the dollar, which countries no longer want because it's exported inflation thanks to quantitative easing.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, let's do bilateral trade. Hey, we recognize your trade. Hey, Argentina, we know you've got a crap currency and you're going into multi-inflation, soon to be exponential hyperinflation. Let's scrap that. But you've got all of these resources in your mountains you still haven't gone in. Let's use that. So we'll cut through the middleman. It'll help stabilize your currency over time and you'll be buying our goods.
Wow. How long? What kind of timeline? Given all of the, you know, the results or the recent things that are kind of going on, how long of a timeline do you think we're on here until China really gets to put this thing in gear and you know, the Silk Road starts going and we really start seeing a significant move away from the dollar?
How soon can we think? What's tomorrow?
Yeah,
the potential of them doing this tomorrow because everything is coming up. Think about this. At the end of April, they had done a secret test of the Shanghai Gold Exchange by doing price discovery. They had done a number of banks in a few Asian countries, and they had done a test for it for 30, 60 days. How would it function if we declared price discovery and started selling gold at a certain thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it worked fine, which means that they made the reports of that test. They could implement that in a second. Once they do, they are not going to sell gold at the U.S. COMEX price. They're going to double, triple that.
Right.
Okay, selling physical gold. What that's going to force the COMEX to do is suddenly have to face, we have to meet that or we're going to fall apart as a futures market.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, China is already counting, doing the math and discovering there is no more gold left to buy, which they have been buying for the last 5 years, and about 1,000 tons a month for the last 18 to 24 months, according to Jim Woolley and his sources.
Wow,
that's where you get the 30,000. That's where you get the 30,000 tons.
Yeah.
Is if you've been buying 1,000 tons a month plus their own production, they are now the world's largest producer of gold, which doesn't leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
So if they've got that much gold, this is how they're going to destroy the system, is because all you have to do is revalue gold. What does revalue gold and the COMEX falling apart? That means a derivatives explosion in the West.
Okay. Well, I want to come back to this idea of a derivatives explosion. We do have to go to this break in about 1 minute, but just as a quick question, what's stopping China? What's the hang up right now? If they're ready to go and they got all this stuff ready to rock and roll, are they working on leverage some other way, or what's keeping them from going?
Well, it goes back to what I was saying. They wormed their way through J.P. Morgan to have a controlling interest in the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
They're working right now to get controlling interest in the IMF. They're putting all the things in place. Once they have it solidified, here's the thing: the reason they haven't started the gold is because I believe it was 1998. There was an attempt to have a competitor to the COMEX. It was like the Pan-Asian gold market.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the cabal and the powers that be in the West pretty much destroyed it within like 6 months.
Right. Okay.
They weren't prepared. So they're making sure that everything is ironclad. And you got to remember who's over there consulting for the Shanghai Gold Exchange. Jim Sinclair.
Who's Jim Sinclair?
Jim Sinclair is probably the preeminent metals guy in the world.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, he was on par, in line to become the Treasury Secretary under Ronald Reagan.
Wow. Okay. I did not know that. And unfortunately, we got to go to this quick 3 minute break or we're going to get cut off by the commercials. Our guest today, Kenneth Shorchen Jr., DailyEconomist.com, RogueMoney.net, and also SecretsOfTheFed.com. Really enjoying this conversation. I appreciate you being here, Ken. We're going to be back after this 3 minute break. Ladies and gentlemen, keep it right here. I will see you guys in the chat room after three brief minutes.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sill, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sill?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him. Right here on Freedom Link, Monday through Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month? Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine Now. Only at hempusa.org.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hangar 18, your TFR Roundtable. Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you to all of you guys hanging out in the chat room right now. If you have questions for Mr. Kenneth Shorten Jr., please feel free to steward them into the chat room and I will bring them across into the interview today. We are talking quite a bit about developments in the BRICS organization and specifically in China and this new development of the Chinese physical gold fund and some of the ramifications that might actually come down the pike. Should this thing kick off, which both Kenneth and I believe is going to happen at any time now. And Kenneth, before the break, we had kind of started to talk about the ramifications of this fund kind of kicking off. And you mentioned a couple of key words, derivative explosion, I think was how you phrased it. And so maybe if we could bring some of the newer listeners up to date on the derivative situation here in the United States and what a potential derivative explosion might actually entail for all of us, sir.
Yeah, well, let's give an example here. A Greek exit, a Greek default would, estimate, at least according to Martin Armstrong, $9 trillion, derivative collapse. Just the derivatives tied to Greek bonds.
Okay.
$9 trillion. So imagine how much are tied to gold and silver, how much are tied to real estate and the new housing bubble,
mm-hmm.
how much are tied to, you know, pretty much all the other bonds and treasuries and et cetera, et cetera.
Subprime really auto loans.
Quadrillion. So anything that defaults, this is, you know, when the banks became too big to fail, what they discovered is that a small bank like, Morgan Stanley, Bear Stearns, or AIG, one of them collapsing could have collapsed the whole system.
Right.
So what they did was they lashed them all together.
Mm-hmm.
If one's starting to fail, then the other banks come in, swoop in, the Federal Reserve swoops in and saves and protects it. But when you, like in shipping, when you, during a storm, when you lash all the ships together, what does that mean? That means that when one goes down, they all go down.
That's right.
And this is what has happened with the derivatives market. When one default occurs, it takes down a huge swath of ships, per se, or banks.
Okay.
And then once those banks start going down, you know, if Deutsche Bank has, or the central bank in Spain, which has a lot of Greek debt and Greek bonds,
mm-hmm.
if those bonds default, then the Spanish banks go down, which then leads to the Portuguese, which then leads to Italy, which then leads to Germany, and then leads to the United States. And that's how the dominoes fall. So one, you know, if Greece defaults on their June payment, and this is why the IMF and the Troika are desperately trying to find some type of solution to keep that default from occurring. That's why Greece has all the cards. Greece is playing a very tricky game.
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because Syriza cannot do austerity. If they do, they're just into power. They just won the election,
That's
you know,
right.
six, 8 months ago. if they do austerity, they're out of business.
Well,
so
Athens,
they've wasted time.
The people in Athens are going to burn Athens to the ground. That's what's going to happen. I mean, let's not, you know, poke around the bush here. The people in Athens understand very well how to riot. And I think that any more austerity that gets pushed down on them, they're not going to respond to very well.
Yeah, don't mess with Spartans.
That's right, man. That's right. Seriously, though. I mean, that's serious.
Exactly. So you've got that. Then, of course, Greece has an ace in the hole, where Russia offered them the chance that if they leave the Eurozone and default on their debt, they could join the BRICS.
That's right.
Then they have the pipeline, Turkestan pipeline, where they could potentially make an agreement with there and get Russia to at least help them remain insolvent. But
man,
then Russia becomes uses Greece as a proxy into the EU. And then, of course, the EU is desperate because their entire banking system is tied to these Greek bonds. And if there is a default, boom, they all collapse.
Well, I got to say, you mentioned that whole Gazprom deal and Greece. And I thought when I read that whole story, what a great day it is to be Gazprom. You know, they can basically loan Greece a bunch of money. That money goes to the IMF. That IMF gives it to Ukraine, who then pays Gazprom with it. It seems like a really good deal if you're Gazprom over in Russia.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the only person that got anything out of that was the infrastructure that Gazprom's going to get built, basically based on the IMF payment again.
Exactly. And, you know, Europe, of course, is trying to divest themselves from reliance on Russian oil. As a matter of fact, Norway. Norway is now the biggest seller of oil to Europe. But that's sort of meaningless because Norway has a limited scope on oil production.
Okay.
So their peak oil is going to last maybe 5 or 10 years. Russia has phenomenal. Plus, Norway's not going to be able to afford to really go into the Arctic like Russia is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because they're backed by China. Nearly every new energy infrastructure thing that's being built is being built with Chinese funds.
Man, you see it everywhere too. There are two huge monorail programs, or the high-speed rail that they're basically funding for Russia, and there's also a huge rail system that they're putting in, I want to say down in Peru right now, to have some more access. It's like I look at the economic news, and it's either really, really amazing stuff that China and BRICS are getting ready to put together and initiate, or it's everything else that's bad, and it mostly stems from the United States.
Yep, exactly. One thing you mentioned you wanted to talk about is the TPP. TPP, in a sense, is a menagerie.
Okay.
Okay. It's the last-ditch effort by the government to try to cede control, sovereign control, to these multinational corporations. So if the U.S. does collapse, then the corporations will be in control. Uh-huh. But if nobody's accepting the dollar, then the rest of the world is not going to accept any TPP agreement.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, the U.S. can have these agreements with Mexico and Canada and whatever, but take a look at who signed up with the AIIB.
Everyone except for us, essentially, in Canada
and
maybe
Japan.
Mexico and Japan. I thought Japan actually did come in. They just weren't as a founding member. I thought they switched teams kind of late in the game.
They're talking about it, but they haven't actually signed on.
Gotcha.
They're estimated to sign on maybe at the end of July.
Okay.
But really, that's a misnomer, too, because they're a vassal state of the U.S.
Right.
And they will not do anything that the U.S. That's why they printed so much money and took their people's pension funds and filled it with treasuries. U.S. needed $200 billion, so Japan sold out their elderly for the U.S. government. So the TPP, really what it is a sovereign and bank takeover. It's destruction of sovereign rights to the U.S.
Right.
Now, here's the thing for people to pay attention to. When the fast-track vote came along, at first the Democrats voted from allowing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the Republicans, and primarily Mitch McConnell, who forced it through.
Right.
The Republicans want to sell the country away, just like NAFTA, just like the Glass-Steagall. In Congress, the Republicans are the ones who are doing this. And, you know, the interesting thing is I've discovered that for months at a time, maybe even a year or so, you'll see the Republicans actually do conservative monetary fiscal policy.
Right.
And then out of nowhere, they'll all join in on Obamacare, or they'll join in on ending the government shutdown, or they'll do something to raise the debt ceiling. They do this, and you're sitting there going, whoa. you know, what happened? I think what it is most of these guys are all paid off.
Of course it is. Look at this stupid thing with the five big banks that we're getting ready to punish, allegedly, you know, for the currency manipulation, right? You read those articles and are like, okay, they're going to be guilty. And they're gonna be felons. They're actually gonna be felons this time, but we've done some backhand dealing to make sure that these felons are still gonna be allowed to run businesses as usual. Meanwhile, the SEC is firing people from ITT Tech because they're too questionable to be running an organization like ITT Tech, which, you know, obviously we could have a discussion about that. But, you know, on one hand, it's okay that we've got felons running the largest banks, and believe you me, they're felons now. But not ITT Tech. So it's like this whole double-edged sword or double standard that we've got for banking interests in this country just boggles my mind, Ken.
Yeah, but you got to remember what you're seeing now. There's a correlation of why individual bankers have not been indicted.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to the Supreme Court ruling that says corporations are individuals and people.
That's right.
So when the government goes after a bank, they're going after an individual and indicting the individual and finding the individual. The individual just happens to be a corporation, and the individual and the people who work in that corporation are simply resources. They're not the ones pulling the trigger. That Supreme Court ruling, most people thought, was tied to election and campaign donations. No. What it does really is it allows the corporation to stand as an individual. And you can't throw a corporation in jail.
That's right.
So everything is now a fine, and all the bankers who actually did the fraud, clicked the mouse button to do the fraud, they were doing it under the guise and control of the individual slash corporation. Hmm. So that's why corporations are being indicted or fined, and people are not, bankers are not. And that was the real diabolical move is that Supreme Court ruling. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you saw, Martin Armstrong dropped a bombshell today or yesterday about a new Supreme Court ruling that opens the door for the government now to confiscate all pensions.
I saw those words, but I didn't get an opportunity to look into it. Do you want to go into that for us a little bit?
Yeah, last week in Tibble versus Edison International, it said – on the surface, it looks innocuous. It looks like it's a good thing.
It always does.
Exactly. Edison holding that their employers have a duty to protect workers in their 401k plans from mutual funds that are either too expensive in fees or perform poorly.
Okay.
So the companies now have to pay attention to the mutual funds that their 401ks do and hold the brokers' feet to the fire.
Sounds innocuous enough, right?
Exactly. But what this does is also, in the ruling, an eight-page ruling, the Supreme Court justices said, there is no duty imposed upon the state to provide a program that would convert, to impose a duty upon employers to ensure 401k plans extends to the federal government. That means the federal government has no right or duty to actually provide retirement plans to people.
Ooh, now that's interesting because there was the other Supreme Court decision from the Illinois State Supreme Court just last week talking about how the Illinois State put a cap on people's ability to have compound interest on their pensions, state pension funds. And the Supreme Court came back this week and last week, I think, and said, no, you guys can't do that anymore. So you guys owe really what you said you owed when these guys signed these contracts. That's interesting now that on a federal level, it's a different story.
Right. And because the government is not responsible. Now think about this. If an employer is responsible for for their 401ks and pension plans,
mm-hmm.
that means that the government, when they see the stock market start to fall, they can say, wait a second, the Supreme Court said we're responsible to make sure that people aren't losing money.
Wow.
So we're going to confiscate all these things, and we're going to put them in an annuity and assure you a 3% return, even though the stock market's failing.
This reminds me of the My IRA thing. And I'll tell you, Ken, when I first heard about the My IRA, somebody told me that Jamie Dimon was going to be running the fund. And it took me like a half an hour to figure out if that was actually accurate or not. Because to me, par for the course for this administration to put somebody like him in charge of that. But that's some scary stuff, the idea that your pensions really right now under – the Supreme Court are no longer safe. That's pretty significant, Ken.
Yeah, and it goes even further. The government is no longer responsible for a program. So that means that at any time they can cancel Social Security.
I was just going to say, doesn't that I mean, now we're talking about Social Security right now.
Exactly. It's all of these things. Wow. There are the biggest employer in the country is the United States government. Uh-huh. 2.6 billion people, or I mean, million people. So all those pensions that they have forced requirement for, they can go ahead and move that money to whatever they see fit. And the Treasury has already done this. During the time that we had the two government shutdowns over the past 2 years, the Treasury Secretary was actually taking the payment that was supposed to go to the pension funds and using it to buy treasuries.
No, really?
Yeah. That's one of their tools that they use during when they need money is instead of providing for the pension fund of all of these government employees, they use it to buy treasuries and then eventually they, you know, try to sell the treasuries back out into the market and then restock the fund.
Right.
But no, it's just, it's the ultimate Ponzi scheme, just like Social Security was the ultimate Ponzi scheme.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
But they're going to need this money. And with the Supreme Court ruling, like I said, on the surface it looks innocuous. Hey, our employers are going to have to make sure we don't lose our money. But you've got Illinois, which is $26 billion, I believe, shortfall.
That's right.
Of their pension funds.
And it's
that
it's,
means now that the states can go ahead and cause or decide either to confiscate it, change it, or even forcibly change the contract of the original pension. You know, we promised you we'd give you 67% of your pay. No, we're going to cut that down to 33%.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have no constitutional backing to actually even give you a pension.
Wow. And this is just crazy. And then, you know, one of the other articles I read this week was talking about how essentially, you know, I think 44 of the states right now here in the United States are coming into the end of the fiscal year here in June. And something like 36 of them are really, really in poor shape right now. And there's been a lot of people talking about how in the normal course of a recession, you know, these states get an opportunity to kind of rearm themselves. But we're, you know, in the situation now where Ms. Yellen is coming out saying, you know, things are looking pretty good right now, and if they stay on this path, I think we're going to be able to raise interest rates. I know you and I together probably don't believe that that's what's going to happen, but interesting that the Fed would be coming out and saying something like that. Things are as good as they're going to get is really what I took away from that. And as good as they're going to get right now leaves us in a situation where 36 states of our 50 are not going to meet their fiscal obligations coming up, in about 2 weeks. So, I mean, this is a pretty serious situation in and of itself, isn't it, Ken?
It's all collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all collapsing. So the TPP, this new Supreme Court ruling, this preparation to confiscate the funds, this is what it's all coming about. Because not only is the economy itself imploding here in the West, but you're getting pressure from the East, from China, trying to drive it into the ground even faster.
Right.
And the interesting thing, I don't know if you mentioned this recently, but the government, the BLS, is actually going to change its models again.
The BIS is that what you said?
No, the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay, what are they doing?
They are going to, when they do their GDP numbers, you know how, or with the unemployment rate, they always have seasonally adjusted numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a number taken out of the sky.
Right. And
it's just a variable that they put in to multiply to make things look better. They're doubling it. And they came out publicly and said they're doubling it.
Doubled seasonal adjusted. What in the hell does that even mean?
That's to ensure that there's no recession.
Or that it doesn't look like there's one on paper, right? I mean, fundamentally.
Exactly. Because with a recession, a lot of things start to trigger in. This is why they kept inflation down. Really, inflation is raging at about between 4 and 8% per month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. But if that was the case, then all of these cost of living allowance mandated things in the government would kick in. And they'd have to increase all the money that they pay their federal employees, pay Social Security, pay pensions, pay Medicare. All of these would go because it's based on the rate of inflation.
So this
That's why they've lied about inflation for
right.
so long. They owe trillions of dollars to the American people for all these benefits because they've kept a false inflation number.
Is this BLS? That's the same organization that keeps people's Social Security numbers from going up as because they're not taking into account energy increases and all that stuff. Is that the organization that's responsible for all that?
I suspect that's probably the Social Security. The BLS is just a reporting.
Okay.
You know, they send out surveys to all the businesses to find out who they hire, who they didn't hire, and that's where they can, or to the states to, you know, what are your hiring numbers?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what they come up with the unemployment rate and how many new jobs are created. The BLS also does GDP. Then you have, of course, the NEA, which comes out with the house, or NHRA, I forget which one, comes out with the housing numbers. You have the ones for the Fed districts.
Mm-hmm.
Come out with their inventory and production numbers for the, this was what's fascinating is the Dallas Fed is tied to all the fracking companies.
Right.
The Dallas Fed has been down.
Dismal.
They've been in full blown recession for 8 months.
That's right.
But then you've got New York City who's, you know, printing money like water. So the New York Fed is coming out. Yeah, we're doing well. We're up 3.5%.
Yikes. Well, Kansas City Fed just cut loose, I think, 8% of their workforce over the last month, and they're down to 4-hour days saying they have trouble keeping people busy at this point. And you wonder, with all the hacking going on, you know, that do you think they'd have something to do, Ken?
Well, you know, you've got what you said about the hacking IRS. I don't know if you realize that the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis last month was hacked.
I saw that and I forgot to make a correlation today, but yeah, their DNS server was hacked in facility. That's pretty impressive, actually.
So you have the central bank, one of their district banks hacked. You have the IRS hacked. Is there really any trust we have with banks? I'll tell you what, I'll say straight out, anybody who keeps any money besides bare necessities, pay for bills right now is going, and I don't mean this coldly, but they're going to get what they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes, every warning, potential warning of what is coming has been provided. Bail-ins, the G20 resolution in January, that every country that signed that resolution has to pass legislation to assure a bail-in during the next banking collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Your money, according to Dodd-Frank, is as an unsecured creditor. It's not your money. It's a liability and a loan to the bank.
That's right.
You know, so, people, it's beyond the point of planning for it. Now you're in survival mode.
Yeah, you got to be doing it today currently as we speak. So obviously, gold, silver, super important right now. We've talked about carat bars on the show before, and I absolutely love carat bars, but I wanted to just touch on Bitcoin. Are you a Bitcoin supporter at this point, or are you still trying to stay away from that?
I like Bitcoin and I like the potential Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. My biggest problem has always been, what good is a form of money if it's not recognized and accepted by retailers?
Right.
So until it becomes widespread acceptance by the retailers, then it's just some fun little, electronic transaction that people are doing amongst each other in the black markets.
Right. Do you think right now is a good time to be holding it, though? Because I'm reading stuff about, you know, Amazon Overstock now obviously accepts Bitcoin, and they're getting ready to offer some sort of stock option, I think, in using the Bitcoin blockchain. So it seems like there are companies now that are starting to really acclimate towards Bitcoin. Do you feel like Bitcoin is going to go up in value as a result of all of that going forward?
Well, you said a more important thing, the blockchain.
Mm-hmm.
The potential of the blockchain itself is immense.
Mm-hmm.
Whether Bitcoin itself lasts through this and becomes sustainable and viable, that's a great question. Because if the inevitable comes where Asia, China, Eurasia, the BRICS, controls the next monetary system, Bitcoin is not really recognized that much over in the BRICS nations or in the ASEAN coalition.
Hmm.
So where is that going to be? Is Bitcoin going to remain more in the black market or the
kind of the fringe
alternative market?
Mm-hmm.
If it does, you know what? The people who are going to do that, that's fine. You know, if your dentist takes Bitcoin and wants to do that or if that, but when it comes to staples that people buy in that,
right.
You've got to be able to facilitate. So I'm not going to say yay or nay against Bitcoin. I think it's a good backup. It's certainly stronger than the Iraqi dinar investment scheme that people tried. But when it comes to that, you need to have some cash out of the bank. You need to have gold and silver. Primarily, if you're gonna do the best of all worlds, you sign up and join Carrot Bars.
Yes.
Because that'll protect your cash offshore, and it will also allow you to buy into gold. Because the thing is not to try to figure out what the next currency is going to be. As I pointed out, China isn't interested in having the yuan be the reserve currency. Gold is going to be the reserve staple currency.
Uh-huh.
And all other currencies are going to be valued in. So when the chaos settles, when the dollar collapses, whatever new currency the U.S. comes out with, whatever new currency Europe comes out with, because you see a collapse like this, the Eurozone is gone. The euro is gone. All the nation states are going to break apart in their own, trying to save their own bacon.
Absolutely.
So whatever currencies they come out with, whatever new coalitions, and trade zones come, if you have gold, then you're prepared to buy into whatever is next. And since a new dollar type currency is going to be devalued immensely, its relation to gold, you're going to be able to buy a whole lot more of the new dollar than worrying about $1,200 to the ounce right now.
Right.
It's going to be more like you'll get, 10 to 15,000 new dollars in this hyperinflation, system. So that, whatever capacity, gold, silver, hold cash, because cash will be king for the first, 60 to 120 days after any collapse, because the banks will be in holiday, the ATMs will be down. But if you've got the cash in hand, you'll be able to buy whatever you need.
Roger that. Okay, and we've only got about a minute left. And, Ken, I wasn't going to go there, but since you brought it up, I do want to ask you about the dinar, because there are a lot of people out here who do listen for news like that. I know Phoenix is one of our hosts on the network that does talk about it a lot. International credit rating request coming from the CBI recently to the big, the big three, S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. What does that mean? Does it have anything to do with Article 8 compliance at the IMF? And do we really feel like they're not moving forward?
Well, they're not moving forward because China and Russia have already come out with their new ratings agencies.
Uh-huh.
And if the new system is going to be based on the mandates coming out of China, especially the control, then they're going to be the ones to determine the value and ratings of nearly all the financial instruments coming forward.
Okay.
So, when it comes to something like the dinar, if Iraq survives ISIS and doesn't get broken into a number of different, that's something the U.S. is talking about doing. They're talking about breaking Iraq into several different regions.
Israel's been talking about that since 1982, man. I mean, that's not it's not conjecture. It's definitely something that they're trying to get accomplished.
So if that happens, then who's going to have the centralized currency? Each region is going to have its own.
Fair enough. Ken, I really appreciate you coming onto the show today, man. We are out of time, but it's always an absolute pleasure to get a chance to chat with you.
Thank you very much. And the best place to see all my articles is dailyeconomist.com. It's a news aggregator site I use for all my writing.
Very nice. Dailyeconomist.com, also roguemoney.net and secretsofthefed.com. Check them out, guys. We will see you guys tomorrow. We got to run. We're out of time. Stan Deo will be with us tomorrow. You
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUE.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.